Hello, folks. It's your friend Bernie here. And in this episode with Sarah, you'll hear about decentralized communities and the significance of shared decision making and power distribution in community development. In the Founders and Coders project where she works, Sarah shares how they encourage collaboration among the participants. Really interesting little bit there. Also about launching communities with intention, the difference between equality and equity. And of course, crafting inclusive spaces, whether that's actually a physical co-working space or another kind of floaty community thing. Our co-creator for this episode are our friends Rayon, which is an online collaborative design tool. Whether you want to move desks around your space or build a whole building from scratch, you can design your project for free in Rayon today. There's a link in the show notes. So without further ado, let's get into the show. Hello, folks, and welcome to another one of our amazing now bi-weekly Co-Working Values podcasts. I'm always very excited, and of course, I'm even more excited because we have Sarah.
You know, in general, kind of decentralized community building, connection building, and really importantly, I think, bridging the gaps between our differences, because I think that is so important right now. And, you know, building in empathy in everything that we design, breaking the barriers between between kind of our illusion of separation. That's only small things, you know.
And that's all before lunch. Yeah, what do you mean this word doesn't come up very often on this podcast, but it is decentralized. So in the context of like what we know, what is decentralized community?
Yeah, I guess decentralized community as I see it is a community where the power is shared really intentionally, where the decision making is shared really intentionally. And I think, you know, in order for it to be a decentralized community, it doesn't mean that it has to be called that. But often, you know, for example, groups of volunteers, even in a local farm or something, may be a decentralized community, even though they may not see themselves as that. So, yeah, I see it as kind of a way to organize community in a way that has more longevity, is more sustainable, because there isn't one head honcho that if they get bored or they leave or something happens to them, then, you know, everyone else is at a loss. So I see decentralized community as something that is about having the keys lying in a lot of different people. And I think this word right now is being used quite a lot in Web3 and kind of that sort of like DAO, decentralized autonomous organizations, that sort of world, the tech Web3 world. I've got opinions about that, but I'm not sure I want to get into them right now. but yeah, that's not necessarily what I mean. I think just the concept in general of sharing power with co-creation.
What was that you just said there about the keys to the community don't lie with one person? Was that?
Mm.
That's really important because there's things where people actually, you know, like if you or me, you know, you or me are the sort of people that would start something. And then if we accidentally or even intentionally, you like build it around us, and then, you know, either we decide we don't like everybody and leave or we leave, you know, it kind of like, because there's something about how when you begin stuff, you need to be aware of how you're beginning it.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you do that? I'm asking for a friend, you know.
Mm.
Like imagine you were starting a co-working space that was like a bit of a free-for-all.
Yeah. which, you know, I have been part of.
No way.
So I mean, I didn't start a co-working space that was a bit of a free-for-all, but I found myself in it and then managing it. But yeah, I totally, that question of how do you start something, essentially start in the way that you mean it to go on, I think is $1 million question. I guess the biggest piece of that is about it being something that's intentional. I mean, often when we start something, I don't know about you, but I often start things out of, you know, both gut feeling, like, oh, I feel like I need this kind of thing, or this thing is needed in the world. And then there's a bit of, I mean, it depends on what I'm doing it for. If it's for a work thing, often there's a lot of research that goes into that. But if it's something that I'm creating because, say, I really feel like I need that beat, that, you know, bit of community or something like that, I maybe won't overthink how I'm creating it until I realize that it's becoming more of a thing. So I think that's quite a hard thing to do. I mean, unless you can see into the future. But I would say, you know, if you were to be intentional about every single thing you created, then it would be more about making sure that you're doing the right use of research to make sure that, yeah, the target audience that you've got, or the thing that you wanted to become is going to be, like, the seeds are you're planting are actually going to match the flowers that you want, for lack of a better metaphor.
That's beautiful, you know. I was scribbling that down. So when you're bringing people together, like, you know, in a program like Founders and Coders or other communities you've been part of, there's how you bring people together and who, I think it's like who is in the room and who isn't in the room, because there's a way to mix people and it clicks, and there's a way to mix people and it's like a bit weird and forced. Can you say a bit about that in like your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah, there's a way to mix people that it clicks and a way to mix people that it feels forced. It's very true. I think in terms of bringing people together, it makes me think of, you know, that book, The Art of Gathering.
Parker or something.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, Priya Parker. She talks a lot about, this idea of, you know, who is allowed in and who is not. Because actually, in order for something to be truly inclusive, like, it can't be for everyone. So you have to decide who is allowed in or not. So I think it's really about being brutal a little bit. So being like, okay, so this is for this sort of person and this isn't for this sort of person. So, I mean, an example from my current work is, you know, I bring in part of my role. I mean, I look after our alumni, so the people who've been through our programs, but also I look after the people who want to get onto our program because it's a free coding bootcamp. So obviously the demand is quite high. And so the trick there is, like, how do we both welcome a lot of types of people in, but also screen for the people who maybe aren't right for this? And so our program is so much about, you know, peer to peer, about sharing your learning, about being your own teacher, or, you know, teaching others, being entrepreneurial in the way that you're learning, in the way that you're seeking to grow. This is both on a technical coding level, but also on a soft skill sort of level, because so much of our program is about collaboration. And so what I need to create is what I have created is a series of events that is not just like, you know, you come and you create, you learn to code with other people, you know, every week to work through our many application projects. Yeah, that's it. But it's really about us also trying to understand, how do you work together with people unprompted as well? You know, how do you respond to being in a room with others? How do you respond to pair programming? And there's an element of kind of, we work a lot with equity, not equality, because, you know, the main focus of our coding bootcamp is actually to get people who aren't usually represented in tech into tech, in actual jobs, you know, like thriving hopefully in the tech world, so that we're actually, you know, getting all sorts of people to shape the future that we're creating. And so that also has to do with us having to, I guess, create extra opportunities for those who aren't usually in the room. So we do have like extra ways to help women, trans and non-binary people to actually get through the application projects. I keep not saying that word properly. And, you know, and the main reason why we do that is because we know that, you know, for whatever reason, the way that people from those demographics are socialized, or the messages they get from society mean that they give up quicker in front of these hurdles, because also they don't see themselves in the tech community anyway, most of the time. And so with that, it's kind of, yes, those extra kind of meetups are exclusive to people who are men, I guess, cis men. But there is a reason for that as well. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's a lot about being really brutal. Like, the answer to who is this community for cannot be it's for everyone, because there's something there about it. It's not necessarily about demographic. It's also about psychographics, which is a word that I learned from Tad Hargrave from Marketing from Hippies.
Oh, no.
Do you know of him? Yeah, he's got really cool content.
I haven't heard of him for years. Yeah, like, that was great stuff. He was one of the first people that did Pay What You Can that I found.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Oh, I've got to go look him up again.
Yeah, he's great. I went to a workshop recently of his, like, a few months ago. So I learned this terminology of, like, psychographics, which is so much about, you know, what is that person, what is that person's qualities, and, you know, what brings that person together with others. And so thinking about how do you design for those psychographics, not just demographics, to come together.
This is really, can we hang around this point? Because one thing before we go on is, can you spell out the difference between equity and equality? Because now I know, but I was very, I would correct, when people would say diversity, inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion, I'd say, no, you mean equality. And they'd be like, no, equity. I mean, no, you're right. And I had to be taken aside a few times to tell me that it was the right word. So what's the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have the actual dictionary definition.
Oh, you're like your gut feel difference. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess with equality, it's, let's say you assume that you're designing something to treat everyone the same, because you're assuming that if everyone had exactly the same opportunities, they could all reach the same goal, or the same distance. Whilst with equity, it's recognizing actually that there are structural barriers. Most of the time they're structural. Sometimes there are other types of barriers, but that means that even with equality, with the same opportunities, people won't get to the same distance or to the same goals. So equity is about taking those barriers into account and actually creating extra extra ways to remove those structural barriers. So in this case, for us, it has been creating an extra support group that's a little bit more tight-knit, a little bit more structured for people of those demographics that we feel are not getting the access to tech education as much.
It's really important. My thing in that situation is, I'm dyslexic and I just don't fill in forms. You know, I used to think I was lazy, and then I actually realized, you know, I'm just getting completely intimidated by a form, and I'd rather like set fire to the building I'm in than fill in the form. But then, you know, if someone comes and sits with me, it doesn't happen very much nowadays, but like if someone comes and sits with me and go and just asks me the questions and fills it in for me, I'm done, you know? Until you have some kind of barrier like that, and that, you know, that's a very, you know, quite a general barrier compared with what some of the people you deal with face, it's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing, like a little bit of support goes such a long way. And I think that's really, really important. And that's why I think when you're, you know, asking how do you kind of weave the right people in, how do you make sure it's the right people in the room, I think like even just a little bit of extra thought of even putting yourself in those people's shoes, that can make such a difference. I think user research is so important, and like this kind of like design mindset in community building.
How would you, I was listening to something about that yesterday. And it's like, how do you, so imagine, you know, go back to when you ran the co-working place. Like, how would you do user research? Not on a, because you can't hire McKinsey to do it for you. Mm. Like, would you, what would you do? Because I was about to mansplain the whole thing to you, so sorry. Like, how would Sarah, if you, you know, say you took over Space 4 tomorrow, how would you do user research?
Oh, bless Space 4. I wouldn't take them over. I just work with them. Space 4 are great. How would I do user research? I think, you know, get to where the people are. I know with Space 4, because it's such a strong in-person community, I would probably like be very active in the actual physical space and make sure that I'm asking the right questions. I think also before you do that, you make sure that the questions you're asking are not leading questions. So, you know, really setting out like, what is it that I want to find out? And how do I ask it in a way? How do I find out that information in a way that isn't leading? So instead of saying like, yeah, I mean, I don't have an example in my head right now, but yeah, something like that. So I think I would go, first of all, yeah, in directly to people, because it's quite a small community. And then I would go for kind of the broader approach. So, you know, emailing or putting it on the Discord channel that Space 4 have. That sort of user research, but also like, also observing people, you know, if like I've got questions about the kitchen usage, observing how people are using the kitchen, you know, and taking a note of that. So, yeah, instead
really,
of like basically
really
all the questions.
Do you know, I bet you do, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you don't. Do you know the Mum Test book?
Yes.
That is amazing.
Yes, I've heard of it. I used to use it a lot when I used to work for what used to be called in Royal Self is now called Huddlecraft, which is like a peer learning, I guess, agency / ecosystem thing. We used it a lot.
Because that bit about the mum and the iPad at the beginning, like when I read it, I was like, that's so obvious. And I just thought of all the apps I'd had a great idea for and couldn't understand why they wouldn't work, you know, and it's because, you know, my mum wouldn't use it. What is, there's something you said before we came on that I thought I hadn't heard. You wouldn't have said this maybe 10 years ago. You said like, when I started my community career and like the role of community, like obviously it has changed, but like, how do you think that's changed in like, you know, the last 10 years? Because if, feels to me like now it's a real job, whereas before it was you know, one below being a bartender.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I find it really interesting how it popped up, because it definitely wasn't something that I knew about when I left university 10 years ago. I would say now it's maybe, I don't know if this is controversial, but I'm a bit worried that it's being co-opted by big corps that think that community is the way to sell more stuff.
That's not controversial. That's true.
Yeah, it's true, right? Okay, good. Yeah. Which
don't
is
hold
both
back,
like,
Sarah.
Yeah, which is both like true in terms of like, yes, you can sell more things if people actually feel connected. However, that shouldn't be the only aim. Like, you need to actually be giving value to people. Like, it should be coming from a need, not just, you know, I want to make more money. That's not a need. Anyway,
you say this word a lot, and it's the intent in which you do it. So if you build a community, because at a certain level, you know, you have to like get, even, you know, founders and coders in Space 4 is a community which has an, you know, an economic element to it. But if you only make a community to sell stuff to, it, you know, it's like a kind of honeycomb community. There's no rock in it, you know, when something goes wrong. And what happened in where was it, lockdown, is there were many, many examples of Space 4 type places that had a strong community element, and they had to close, but people still kept on paying their membership because they weren't renting a desk, they were sustaining a community.
Absolutely.
And then there were other like places that were just renting a desk, but they were, you know, what you alluded to just now, like bumping up the community element. And people, it got down to people saying, well, in my contract, it says I do this. And I brought, you know, these free beer and tables and, you know, yoga studios, and I can't use them. So I'm not paying for them. So, and, you know, they were selling stuff, and these people were selling a community. I wanted to say something way cooler there. these people were, you know, their economy was around a community.
Yes, absolutely. And that's, I think, the difference between like really genuine communities that are, again, bringing people together, because, there's an element of like everyone is holding a bit of the key, or everyone has a key to it, right? And so they have the buy-in. And so I think that's more of a like genuine community than something that is just like, we give you beer on Fridays. Not everyone might drink, by the way, like, so they may not want it.
Very good point.
Yeah.
And what's one last thing is, this, I meant to ask this about 20 minutes ago, sorry. Like,
okay.
With founders and coders, and you bring all these people together, and how do you, I don't want to say how do you get them to collaborate, but that's the quickest question. Like, how do you get them to collaborate in those circumstances? Because like paired programming is, you know, it's a very, there's got to be a connection there, I think is what I'm asking.
Yeah,
absolutely. How do you get the connection to happen in that kind of production capability environment?
Well, I think it relates to the question you asked at the beginning, which is like, how do you choose the right people, right? And that's, if you want to join Founders and Coders, that's the deal. You pair program, you get along with people, you learn how to collaborate with people, regardless of whether you match personality wise or not, you know, and that's part of actually how you prepare people for work. Because there is a lot of pair programming, of collaboration, and of working with team members, regardless of whether you chose them or not, in the real world of work. So, you know, people are put into groups. Sometimes they can choose their groups. Sometimes they can't. They're also put into pairs, you know, and again, sometimes it's a choice, sometimes it's not. But, you know, the people who have applied and who have gotten through, most of the time they have had that experience from our applicant meetups, which happen every week, or at least they're very much checked in with at interview and at any point before they join, that they know that this is a very collaborative program. And the reason why we do that anyway is because at the heart of it, we know that peer learning really helps people fully learn and to actually build that muscle of lifelong learning. I guess it's kind of like, it's not really a choice. If you want to join that program, then you're either in with that or you don't join the program, I suppose. The kind of harsh self-selection that I mentioned before.
That's really important, because people always, there's, you know, oh, it's for everybody, and it's not. And you know, I've done so many things like everyone's welcome and no one comes. And when I, you know, when I say like, you know, I want ex-boyfriends of Naomi Campbell that grew up in High Barnet, you know, it's really focused and very self-selecting. And also that peer-to-peer stuff is so important. Like getting together formally and informally is like the magic pixie dust of, you know, life progression. So where can we find you online, Sarah? And, you know, what would you like us to know about you, and how can we help you? And we'll put a link in the show notes to the whole thing.
Oh, thanks. Well, I recently deleted all my social media apart from LinkedIn, so you can find me online on LinkedIn. My full name is Sarah Adifihinti. I'm sure, Bernie, you will write that down because people won't know how to spell that.
Link in the show notes.
And if you want to find out more about Founders and Coders, our website is foundersandcoders.com, and we're always looking for apprenticeship opportunities for our brilliant, brilliant cohorts of people who come from all walks of life and all sorts of careers. So yeah,
where does I'm leading question here. Gee, Sarah, where does Founders and Coders happen in London?
It's in Finsbury Park in Space 4. Good old Space 4.
Yeah, and on Space 4, folks, on Wednesdays, there's a community lunch, which is one of the best things you can ever do in a co-working space in London. And I went to my first one in 2016. And it is...
It's great. You should come back.
I live in, you know, for those of you that don't know, I live in Vigo in Galicia. And when I come back, I always try and work out how I'm going to get to Space 4 on a Wednesday. And even like, you know, I haven't managed to do it yet, but I'm booking my flights to the horror of Polly Robbins. my carbon footprint, I try to arrange it around that. But link in the show notes to Founders and Coders and Sarah's LinkedIn. And thank you very much for your time and attention today.
Thank you.
Cheers, folks.
Take care.
Hi, folks. Thanks for your time and attention today in our podcast with Sarah. Remember, the strength of our communities lies in our collective efforts and shared values. Please rate, follow, share, or whatever you want to do, and leave a review for the Co-Working Values podcast. It helps the show more than you will ever know. And also, more importantly than our fame, it also helps people in the wider general public and your neighborhood understand what co-working is, how it will help their local community, and how it can benefit them in building their careers, their projects, and work. And last of all, thanks again to our co-creator Rayon Design. So like I said before, whether you want to move desks around your space or build a whole building from scratch, you can start your project in this online collaborative design tool for free today. So go to the link in the show notes, and always be careful out there. It is a jungle.